Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast from KJZZ's The Show. Each Friday, we review the biggest and most important political stories of the week with a panel of experts, which puts those stories into perspective to help us understand why they matter. Here's this week's episode.
I know better than anyone that this campaign is not going to be easy. I've been underestimated in every single race that I've ever run. But I will tell you this, I have never lost.
Katie Hobbs hasn't really delivered for Latinos either. And so I believe that Donald Trump has delivered more for Latinos than Katie, and I believe I will deliver more as governor.
Why did I decide to run for office? It is a desire to leave this country better for our children and our grandchildren. That's it in its core. You know, what we're doing is fighting for the future of this country. I truly believe that.
He said that he is going to follow orders from one man, the guy in the White House. And, you know, I don't think that's what the voters of the Arizona 1st District really want to see here.
We will fight crime. We will defend the laws and the Constitution. And we will root out every single bit of fraud, waste, and corruption in this state.
The misleadingly titled Protect Education Accountability Now Act is a shameless attack on Arizona's parents, funded by an out-of-state union. We don't believe the unions have turned in enough ballot signatures and that they're trying to game the system to get on the ballot. That's why we filed this challenge.
And with me to break down the results of this week's primaries and look ahead to November are Jaime Molera with the firm Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good morning.
Good morning.
And Gael Esposito of Creosote Partners. Gael, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, too.
Jaime, let me start with you. Who had the best night, Tuesday night? Or I guess maybe even, you know, leaking into Wednesday morning?
Well, that's a good question. I would say Feely campaign. I think they were a bit anxious because Chaplick was really making some progress at the end.
In the 1st Congressional District.
In CD1, correct. And so they were able to leverage a lot of the Turning Point support. And most of the Turning Point candidates, and I should say Turning Point actually had a pretty good night because mm-hmm. most of their candidates did pretty well.
Gael, who do you think had the best night?
The Democratic Party. I think seeing some of these Republican winners, I'm feeling pretty good about their chances in November.
Okay, so which ones, like if you are, which campaigns this week are maybe feeling perhaps more confident than they were maybe Sunday or Monday?
I think, you know, if I'm Adrian Fontes, I was probably a little bit more nervous about Gina Swoboda winning that primary and getting to go up against Alex Colladan is something that, you know, he's probably very excited about. I think the governor is in a really great position. Andy Biggs is an extreme candidate who is going to follow Trump and Turning Point wherever they point and tell him to go. So I think she's in a really strong position. I think we are looking at a big Democratic wave here this time.
Do you agree with that, Jaime?
No.
Do you think that are the Republican candidates as problematic as Democrats think they might be?
And I'm not stumping for the GOP. I mean, I just think Arizona's are still a conservative Republican state. And while I would agree that the governor has a good chance of winning, juxtaposed against Andy Biggs, because Andy Biggs is close to President Trump, whose numbers are not very good in Arizona right now. But you still have 330,000 more Republicans. And so the Republican Party, particularly Biggs, has to message the campaign in a way that really affects Arizonans and gets Republicans to come out for him. I still think that it's going to be a very tight race. We heard earlier where Governor Hobbs said that she's been underestimated a lot. Well, Andy Biggs has been also. I remember when he became Senate president, a lot of people didn't think he'd be able to get that. When he ran for Congress the first time, a lot of people didn't think he'd be able to win there. So I think it's going to be a good race. You have two seasoned politicians, and there's going to be a lot of money thrown into this.
Yeah. Well, and we've already seen TV ads. Like the next day, both right. Hobbs and Biggs' campaign had TV ads. Do you think it's safe to say, Jaime, that from the Hobbs campaign, we're just going to continue to see Andy Biggs linked to Donald Trump and, to an extent, Jeffrey Epstein?
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to see that up until Election Day. I mean, they're really going to be pounding that. I think, conversely, the Biggs campaign is going to be talking about the ineffectiveness of her administration, really, to move anything. I think you're going to see a lot of attention being paid to the vetoes, ironically enough, because they're going to say, well, she really hasn't done anything as governor. Mm. All she was able to do is block things. So it's going to be interesting how they message that and what are the things that will break through in order to convince, again, Republicans to come out and vote, because that's going to be the key for the Biggs campaign.
So, Gail, if you're the Hobbs campaign, how do you try to take her record and say to voters, make it for something, I guess, as opposed to just, hey, I'm here blocking all this stuff that the Republicans in the legislature are trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, the governor has a clear record of getting bipartisan budgets passed pretty effectively with her priorities in them. I think we saw this year the moratorium on data center tax credits. That's going to be a big thing that they'll talk about in the immediate. They've signed some really interesting and good housing affordability laws to cut red tape. I think they're going to focus on that sort of record.
And Jaime, we've seen Andy Biggs talk about, you know, working with Democrats. I mean, he said, you know, he worked with Kyrsten Sinema, he worked with Hakeem Jeffries. I think he maybe name dropped John McCain also at one point, maybe forgetting McCain was actually a Republican.
Right.
But I guess to what extent do you think Biggs is going to try to lean into that in the general election as opposed to his, you know, his ties to Donald Trump, his ties to Turning Point?
Well, and I've said this before, I think on the show, where if Andy Biggs becomes the person he was when he was Senate president, as opposed to the person he is as Congressman Biggs, that, you know, is head of the Freedom Caucus, that's been very tied to President Trump. If you look at his campaign, they really haven't been talking to Turning Point. They really haven't been talking about Donald Trump at all. And I think that's for a reason, right? So I think you're going to see them really start to move away from the ties to Trump and really focus on, you know, the message of their campaign, which is a better economy and a governor that's going to be more effective.
So one more question about this primary. Are you surprised at the margin and how badly David Schweikert lost?
I'm not. And the reason is because regardless of how effective they may be in the general, which I don't think they'll be as effective, but Turning Point in a Republican primary is absolutely critical. And I think when they threw his weight behind Andy Biggs, I think it had an impact. And I'm not so sure why. I think Karen Taylor Robeson saw that very early on.
Mm.
She dropped out of the campaign at the beginning of the year. I was kind of surprised that Schweikert stayed on to the bitter end. But I figure he figured that he was going to catch lightning in a bottle, but it just never happened.
Yeah. Gail, when do you expect to hear who the candidates might pick as their lieutenant governor running mates? The first time that we're going to have these, so there's kind of no precedent for this.
Yeah, I think they're going to wait a little bit here, you know, get a little separation from the primary news cycle when things are a little bit more quiet, try to get some attention out of those picks. But yeah, I think there's a no precedent. There's a lot of way to make a splash about it, a lot of education that's going to have to happen with voters that this new position exists and why we're doing it. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of potential there for some good earned media cycles for both campaigns.
Do you think that it will matter? I mean, there's every 4 years there's talk about, you know, does the vice presidential pick move the needle or not? Do you think lieutenant governor moves the needle here?
No, not unless they pick somebody who ends up being a complete dud. I mean, that's really it. Unless that person does something extremely controversial or has scandal, I don't think it makes that much of a difference for folks.
What do you think, Amy?
Sarah Palin might be moving into Arizona.
I mean, she lived here for a while, right? I don't know that she still does, but she used to.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I think it depends on what the polls say, too. If the governor looks like she's pulling away from Congressman Biggs, then I would anticipate her waiting and saying, you know what, I'm going to pick somebody that's more closer to my political affiliation. But if it's really, really tight, then you might see her looking to get, you know, there's been a lot of rumblings about Jimmy McCain,
yeah,
in the mix. Former mayor of Mesa, John Giles being in the mix. So I think a lot of that might play into it.
Okay. Jaime, let me stick with you and ask about a couple other statewide races. Gail mentioned Alexander Colladin, state representative, won the primary for Secretary of State. If you're the Fontes campaign, is that what you're hoping for?
Yes. Short answer, yes. Absolutely.
Do you think that he starts the general as the favorite?
Fontes, absolutely. I think it's going to be very hard for Colladin with his record. He's just been very divisive within the Republican ranks. So that certainly gives Fontes an advantage.
Okay. And in the attorney general race, there's a competitive primary on the Republican side, Rodney Glassman and Warren Peterson. Senate President Peterson won that. How do you handicap the general election you know, 3 days after the primary here.
That's going to be a very, very competitive race. I think Attorney General Mays is a good candidate. I mean, she's been around politics for a long time. Her weak spot is going to be her relationship with the business community. I mean, she's been very progressive in a lot of her outlook, especially towards business interests. A lot of business groups were not happy with some of the things she's done. I think that might help Peterson, but it's still going to be a very tight race.
Do you think it's going to be a – I mean, she won, you know, if it's more than 300 votes for Mays, this time it's a landslide compared to her race, you know, 3.5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think Chris Mays has been running an excellent campaign. She's been on TV. She has a great record and ability to get attention to her causes and has been seen fighting for the little guy, even in rural Arizona, where she's been really active in protecting water rights and standing up for community out there. I think that she recognized how small those votes, that vote margin was, and she's going everywhere in the state to pick them up. And I think she's running a really good race.
Do you think that of the two candidates, she got the one to face in November that she wanted?
I think I was feeling pretty good if I was her either way. I mean, Rodney Glassman is a perennial loser. So I think if he had won a race, that would have been the more surprising thing. But Warren Peterson is somebody who's fresh out of law school. Like he does not have that much experience as a lawyer. He's not somebody who like has done the job. And Chris Mays has a great record where she's been standing up against monopoly corporations, where she's been fighting to protect folks' water rights and the rights of consumers, protecting renters from price gouging and landlords who have been just seeking to scam people. I think she has a great record to run on, and I'm feeling pretty good if I'm her.
Okay. Jaime, one more race, an office you know well, the superintendent of public instruction. This was another competitive primary, and the incumbent, Tom Horn, actually lost to Kimberly Yee, and a race that was, you know, not a blowout, but also not terribly close. Is this an example, do you think, of what you're saying earlier about Turning Point had a good night?
I think it absolutely has an impact, and it had an impact on that race because they came out and endorsed her. She was part of what was called their golden ticket, so she definitely benefited from that. But remember, Kimberly Yee also has a name of her own. I mean, she was the highest Republican vote-getter in the last campaign statewide. So I think that makes her a known entity, and she, by and large, has done a very good job as a treasurer. So I think that really helped her for this race.
Is that race down ballot enough where – you know, anything that might be going on in terms of the feelings about President Trump or feelings about Turning Point, like it doesn't necessarily work its way down to superintendent?
I think so. I think so. I think a lot of the races, you know, below attorney general really, you know, I know a lot of Democrats would like to say that's going to happen. But I just, again, going back to the factor that there's 330,000 more Republicans, it's going to be difficult in those types of races for a Republican not to lose, unless you're a really bad candidate, unless you really just have made a mess of your campaign or taken positions that are so extreme. Republicans should have a good opportunity to win these down-ticket seats.
Gail, how do Democrats try to maintain, to the extent that there is momentum at the top of the ballot, how do they try to keep that going down to a race like superintendent, like the legislature, some of those other races?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we saw in 2018 with Kathy Hoffman, the Democrats be successful in picking this up. I think, you know, Kimmy's a better candidate than Frank Riggs on this front. So it's going to be a little bit tougher for Teresa Leiber-Ruiz, but she has been really hustling out there, doing the work. I think she has a great resume and, you know, has that experience as a teacher, as an administrator that folks will look to. But I do think with that level of down ballot, it is largely just a matter of how big of a year is it for Democrats, or is it a little bit of a better year for Republicans than folks maybe are expecting? And I think those national trends really do impact that race more than maybe, as Simon was saying, the top three.
Gaia, let's start with the first congressional district. This is sort of a Scottsdale, Fountain Hills, East Valley district. David Schweikert, longtime representative. He, of course, ran for governor, as we talked about. So there are competitive primaries on both sides. And the party's pick, the National Democrats' pick, did not win. It was Amish Shah who once again came out of this primary. What does that tell you?
I mean, I was shocked to see how late the DCCC started spending. It was a week after ballots had dropped. And you saw that start to impact the vote totals as the ballots were counted and the race narrowed slightly. But just too little, too late. And I credit to Amisha, he hustles. He knocks on doors. He has those deep conversations with voters. And he, you know, started off with an advantage in polling and name recognition. And I think he did what he had to do to really just secure that. He was in mailboxes early. He was out there in the field early, and he just ran a better campaign.
What does he have to do differently this time to not have the same result as 2 years ago when he lost to David Schweikert?
I think he does. You know, the door knocking is really successful in a crowded primary, and I think it is an important aspect of a general election campaign. But being able to go up on TV and compete on all the different media outlets out there is going to be critical. I think you're going to see a lot of national money pour in to help there. But his campaign's going to have to control that message a little bit. I think, you know, he is also just going to benefit from that better national environment than a couple of years ago and an open seat. Right. He's running against a guy who was an NFL kicker and a color commentator. I mean, the thing he maybe is best known for is having an SNL sketch about how mediocre of a kicker he was. So, like, I don't know that he's the best candidate for Congress, but, you know, he is charismatic at the very least, but they both are.
All right, I think it makes him a kicker, Jay Feely, of course.
I think it makes him 80% more competent than most of the people we have in Congress right now.
So, Jaime, what are your takeaways from that campaign, from the Republican? Well, Feely, of course, had the Trump endorsement,
right.
But Joseph Chaplick had a pretty deep ties with sort of the Arizona Freedom Caucus,
right.
And some of the, you know, right, you know, far right folks in,
right.
in that district.
Well, and money makes a difference. I mean, Feely was able to get the Turning Point support. He was able to get a lot of money early on, which I think made a big difference. It was a tight campaign. Chaplick ran a very strong campaign, I think, really tried to get to the right of Feely. So now Feely needs to really position himself away from, like we talked about with Governor, same thing. I mean, he really needs to say, look, I'm going to be my own person. I'm going to focus on these issues. I think Shah is going to just try and tie him to the hip with President Trump, and that's going to be the best chance that they have.
Is that maybe more important for Feely in that district, which is not traditionally anyway, not a super MAGA type district?
And I think Shah is the best candidate for Feely in a lot of ways, because there was a reason why the DCCC was pushing Marlene Garland Woods so hard, is that they saw the polling data that showed that, you know, Shah is a fairly progressive – he was a fairly progressive legislator, and that's the position he's going to be in Congress. So they knew in that particular district, which is a very centrist district, it still leans Republican, he's going to have a tough time. With his positions that he's taken in the past. So I think they see Feely as the best choice, and that's why I think if it would have been Chaplick, then I think that would have been maybe a difference. But Feely is certainly the best candidate for the Republicans.
Kyle, one more question on this district for you. Is it going to be awkward? You'd mentioned national money coming in for Shah. Is it going to be awkward between the DCCC and him? Because they obviously endorsed one of his opponents, and he was not shy about saying he wasn't thrilled about it.
Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't have been, but I think there are no permanent enemies, no permanent friends, especially when you're on the same team here. I think Shah even cracked a joke about it at his victory party that hopefully he'll get their endorsement now. But like, I think they will bury the hatchet on this pretty quickly and work together to win this seat. And I think Shah had a record where, you know, he, for being in a solidly blue district as a legislator, he broke with the party pretty often. So I think he does have the profile for the district. I think, his experience as a doctor is something that, like, will contrast nicely to football kicker.
When they both were with the New York Jets at the same time.
That's right.
Shah was one of the sideline physicians when Feely was a kicker there. So kind of an interesting – I'm not sure either of them necessarily wants to bring up the Jets and their connection to them during this campaign. But
that's what hurt them.
That's a Giants fan talking. So take that for what it's worth. Jaime, one of the other – maybe the other competitive district in Arizona is CD6 in Tucson, where Juan Ciscomani is the incumbent. He did not have a competitive primary. Joanna Mendoza, the Democratic nominee. How do you see that? Obviously, we're still ways out, but how do you see that race shaping up at this moment?
Well, both of those districts, congressional districts 1 and 6, are going to be ground zero for the national fight to who controls Congress, who controls, in this case, the House of Representatives. So you're going to see a lot of money, more money than I think we've seen ever come into our state. Juan Ciscomani has a candidate that I think is going to be very good. I mean, she, former military, not seen as too progressive, even for being in that part of the state and down in Pima County. So Juan needs to really do a better job of positioning himself away again from the administration and showing that he's more centrist and it's going to be more fit for that district. But it's going to be a tough race. I think they're going to have a tough time holding on to it.
What do you think, Kyle?
I think Juan Ciscomani is toast, quite frankly. I think he is in a rough position. I think his polling shows it. I think being a down-the-line vote nearly 100% of the time for the Trump administration was a gamble he made to survive a primary challenge, and now it's going to hurt him in that general. And I think Joanna Mendoza is an absolutely stellar candidate who I think is going to flip that seat.
All right. Jaime, one more congressional question. In CD5, this is Andy Biggs' district that he, of course, left to run for governor. Former Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb. This is a very, very conservative district. Mark Lamb had, let's say, some baggage going into the primary. Still won.
Couple of stories, right?
Few things that were maybe a little unsavory. He, of course, is denying it. We should say he is saying that it's not true. But he still won pretty handily in that race. Is there any reason at all for him to be concerned in a general election, given all the stuff swirling around?
I don't think so. I think just the advantage of that district. Now,
the registration advantage.
The registration advantage is massive. Now, I think he needs to get some good attorneys because the moment he gets into Congress, you know, there's going to be some investigations going on. And so that's where they need to make sure that they're have all his facts straightened out.
Gael, is there any reason to think that National Democrats might spend a penny in that district?
No, I wouldn't if I were them. It's so far to the right. And I think, you know, once the congressional investigations start, maybe then, like, you start to uncover a little bit more and you have the opportunity for more stories that do enough there to where you have sort of an Alabama in 2017 or whenever that was situation where Democrats flipped a super red seat. But I think that he is pretty well positioned right now.
Okay. So we have about a minute left. I want to ask each of you, what was your biggest surprise based on the primary results? Kyle, I'll start with you.
I don't know if it was a surprise, but it was a really good night at the legislative level for progressives in the Democratic caucus. I think you saw them win a lot of open seats, flip some incumbents, you know, taking out Lydia Hernandez in LD24 by pretty large margins. You know, there's still an undecided one down in Pima County for the state Senate seat between Alma Hernandez and Rocky Perez that, like, could be another big pickup for progressive Democrats. So I think you saw a continuation of the shift we've been seeing nationally, which is people want fighters out there. People want folks who are willing to take on what we've been seeing from the Trump administration and fight for their priorities at every level. And so hopefully we'll continue to see that at the legislature.
All right. Jaime, what was your biggest surprise?
I guess we talked about it earlier. The only slight surprise was the margin of victory that Andy Biggs had over Schweikert. I think that bodes well for his campaign because you just don't get those votes. I mean, you really have to work it. You have to have a good organization. I know the Biggs campaign does have a good organization, and I think they're going to be formidable come November.
All right. Jaime Molera, Gael Esposito, thanks to you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Friday Newscap. You can find the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.